Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the July 23 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Markets from Elkhorn, Nebraska, and Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
As usual, I think, and we'll start, Kurt, with you, kind of a list of items you think we ought to discuss today.
Well, basically, several things. One is how big or how small the crop is and, you know, good areas and bad areas. I think main question is, you know, how they're going to adjust the supply-demand balance sheet as we move down the road.
Wayne Nelson?
Well, I think the biggest thing we're going to have to figure out is harvested acres, looking at this, how many of these acres are going to be zeroed out and what's going on. You know, we talk about the acreage, or not the acreage size, the crop size, whether it's a 166, 164, whatever, but that isn't very important until we know how many harvest acres we figure.
And Elaine.
I absolutely agree with Wayne on the acreage thing, and I'm really excited to hear from all of you folks that have probably been farther out into the eastern Corn Belt than I've had a chance to get this summer, about what the prospects are for weather going forward. You know, if we look at a forecast, I assume that many of these acres are too dead or too deeply damaged to ever be righted from this point forward, so I'd like to talk about weather.
All right, so we'll do all of that, but first I want to talk about something that none of you just managed to mention yet, and maybe I am wrong, you can tell me, but gold below $1,100, how much of a problem might that be?
Well, there's still debate on actually what happened. I saw several reports and didn't have a whole lot of time to read into them, but ideas are that it was sort of manipulated in a way from Asia. As I understand it, Japan was on holiday that night. There was large orders that went in, and it went below the market and just kind of fueled and snowballed on itself. So the question is, was it manipulated? Then, two, is it going to offer a buying opportunity below this $1,100 level?
Yeah, because it has not recovered. So if it was manipulated, it stayed down.
Correct. Yeah, that's the thing is somebody had some agenda. That magnitude of volume in light volume, it needs to be investigated.
Did it cause you to think about deflation and problems that it might create over the longer haul with the marketplace?
Well, Todd, I think the one thing we have to realize with this is gold is down, crude oil is down, copper's down, sugar is down, and we're looking at the last time we saw a good move up in the commodities, you know, the rising water floated all boats, and there's no boats floating very high right now, and that's one of the reasons that a lot of people think that if this weather straightens out, this has been just a weather rally, not the commodity rally. So it is very troubling to look at.
Elaine, do you have thoughts on China, gold, and the outside markets?
Right. To the extent that the gold story or the commodity story in general, this bearish overall commodity complex story, is tied to China, to their prospects for a soft landing or a hard landing, or what happens with their stock market or what happens with even their real estate market. If you have a lot of Chinese money being pulled out of the markets in general, or even just a bearish overall global expectation for commodity demand, yes, those are very bearish things that could hit the soybean market in the United States, especially this time of year when we are very competitive or trying to be very competitive with the Brazilian soybean market.
All right, so let's take up the weather because we really need to talk about this a bit more in depth. We live, work, and feel a lot of the heart of the problem, especially, Wayne, in your area, Crawfordsville, and going north. Here where I am in Urbana-Champaign, going north, really tough. I think, Kurt, you probably see a bit better crops where you are. How big do we suppose this space is. And Wayne, how bad is the crop today after a little more heat, a little more sunshine, if at least not the heat?
Well, we're seeing the bad fields get worse, Todd. They seem to just be going downhill very much. They're the ones that are, you know, waist high, whatever, maybe tasseling, everything that way. The beans that are under 6 to 8 inches tall, or they're just totally drowned out, you know, and dead corn and dead beans don't yield well. So we've got a lot of those areas. In our immediate area, we see good, we see bad. We saw a major analyst that went on a crop tour through Indiana and Ohio out of Chicago. We saw the pictures, and I said, he said, well, it wasn't bad from here to here. And I looked at them, and half of them were bad. And then I remembered Indiana's only rated 46% good to excellent, so half of them should be bad, and half of them should be good. So, you know, we're seeing some real problems in our area. We're seeing some very good corn that's been with a tiling. And where it happened. So that's what we've seen.
Yeah, highly variable. I mean, guys are looking, going through the same field, you know, 200 bushel corn to zero bushel corn. You know, corn's the main one. Beans may got a little time. That's going to be a tough one to figure. But corn is too dang late in a lot of areas. One analyst said, you know, we're going to have a record at Iowa, Minnesota, South Dakota, and some portions of Nebraska. And that's going to offset Illinois and Indiana. But yet you got Missouri, Ohio, and portions of Kentucky and Tennessee that's heavily damaged too. So how you average this all out, we're probably not going to know until January, but I know we're not at 166, 164 as a nation. I think Illinois, Indiana, Missouri, and Ohio is going to pull the corn yield below 160 bushel the acre.
Fellow farm broadcaster Steve Bridge from WFMB out of Springfield, Illinois. That would be about 80 miles to the west of where we're located. Was reporting this week that the Sangamon County Farm Bureau has decided not to do its crop tour this year because they thought that corn crop was just too variable. This is not a place that we thought was in that bad of a condition.
Well, yeah, you drive down the road, man, you're bullish, and then you're bearish. I mean, driving down the road is very exhausting. You get home, you're ready to sit down and relax. The thing is, it's going to make the pro farmer crop tour here towards August 17th a little bit more because they take a swath right through Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, and they're not going to catch
they
Missouri.
They run the heart of the Corn Belt
so,
in that one.
It'd be very, very interesting to see their observations because they're going to pull in a spot and going to have to move over because there's going to be nothing there.
And as you well know, we'll have those on our daily broadcast. And Matt Bennett, who is with Channel Seeds on Thursday afternoons regularly with us, has already agreed to be on the air most days, I think, to talk to us a little bit about that. And we'll probably catch up with the guys at Pro Farmer along the way, too. We'll put all that together. Matt will be here for Commodity Week on that Thursday, so we'll get a deeper view from him on that week. Elaine, we've had awfully rough weather here, but where you are, at least we're told, the crop looks really good.
Yeah, Kurt is really onto something when he mentions the record yields possible in Iowa, Minnesota, South Dakota. However, going to the acreage argument that's going to be coming up in the August 12th report, I think you'd be surprised, or I've been surprised, by the number of fields that just never got planted. In the spring, we did have wet weather. It didn't continue. It wasn't as deep, but the timing of it did create a lot of prevent planting situations, and mathematically speaking, you know, a zero is going to drag down, you know, your overall nationwide number a lot faster than the 200 bushel per acre record yields are going to ever drag the number back up. So overall, I'm bullish from a production standpoint just because of what I hear from the eastern Corn Belt, but it is absolutely true that the places that look good, very, very good.
Wait a second. So when you talk about zeros out west, are you talking about the southwest corner of Iowa and the northwest corner of Missouri or someplace broader than that?
No, I'm talking broader, scattered. This is what I'm surprised when I take my little windshield tours through the western Corn Belt, the scattered all through eastern South Dakota, southern Minnesota, here and there in Iowa. Just the timing of the rains right in, you know, early June, mid-June, just really, I think, caught people by surprise.
Okay, so I know from Gary Schnitke's Farm Doc Daily posting, and you can go find it and read it if you'd like on the Farm Doc Daily website, that North Dakota, South Dakota, followed by Minnesota are the top, normally the top three prevent plant acres in the nation year in and year out, I think in that order. And Missouri, I believe it ranks, but I don't know that it's number four. So it'll be interesting to see how those numbers turn out. And I guess you're of an opinion. Are they going to show up, you suppose, once we get to the crop production report? They should, August 12th. I guess that's what you're really thinking, isn't it, Elaine?
I hope so. And maybe they will, but maybe they won't. Did they survey all of the states, or did they only resurvey Missouri?
No, they only resurveyed. They resurveyed Arkansas, Kansas, and Missouri. But for the crop production report, they'll be going out. They'll find them if they're there, and they happen to be in the fields they're at. But so I was thinking they would not show up in the survey, but they would show up in the crop production. They may very well show up in the crop production numbers, and they're used to dealing with the Dakotas and Minnesota having prevent plant or quite a bit of prevent plant in them. So
they should have FSA numbers by then too.
Yeah.
So, and a lot of that's geographical, you know, in these. You're always going to have a lot more variable acres. But, you know, when I mention these prevent plant acres out here in the Western Corn Belt, I'm not really even thinking, you know, government report numbers. I'm just, these are futures markets that should reflect reality. So that is a piece of the puzzle for the markets that we're in.
There's going to be a lot of prevent plant in Illinois, Indiana, and so forth, but there's a lot of beans that went in the ground this past week that should have not been going in the ground. So it's I mean, we saw a huge week this week of first-time beans plus double-crop beans going on the ground at the same time. So it's going to be interesting to see what observations come out of that.
You know, why would that happen?
Because, Todd, that after July 1st, you can take the prevent plant, and that's after the late planting date.
Well, you can
prevent
plant and still,
put those in. So there's some people trying to make something on that. But most guys weren't able to get in right immediately then because of rain. So, you know, if Kurt saw him going in the last 10 days, that's awfully late for double crop, let alone first crop beans.
This is a streak from St. Louis straight east into Indiana, a big swath in through there.
That'd be far enough south they think it can make it.
Well, they definitely took prevent plant. We know there are a lot of acres in southern Illinois, probably in southern Indiana too, that all went prevent plant. I would guess a highly unlikely that they will make mini beans, if any beans at all. So we'll see how that plays out, I guess.
And there's a lot of beans along the Mississippi that the levees didn't hold. And, you know, we know of one of our customers that's got 1,600 acres that looks like a lake.
Yeah. Well, we have an interesting year that we'll have to deal with. So I think, Elaine, I'll start with you. And I think I know the answer to this for corn, but give me for corn and soybeans, friendly or bullish?
Well, for corn, I'd say neutral. But for soybeans, I think they've pulled back too much. I think that they would be more justified in the $10 range than down here beneath $10.
Why?
Well, I think that just going forward, they've got more production a season to get through than corn does. I think at this point, the corn market is fairly well understood. You know, what's lost has been lost, but soybeans have a lot of blooming to go through, you know, a lot of fungus pressure or disease pressure if they continue to be wet all summer. So that's why I'm a little more bullish for beans than I am for corn.
Okay, so she added one. I said friendly or bullish, but I'll go neutral, friendly, bullish. I'll even throw bearish in for fun, Wayne Nelson.
Well, I think one of the biggest problems we're seeing right now is export demand. The beans, you know, we're just 50% of what we generally have sold now. This time for the last 8 or 9 years, this is the lowest amount of beans we've got sold to China. And that's what's worrying everybody. We've been beat out on every sale here as of late because of that. I think that we've got some problems with production here in the U.S. And we aren't going to have near as many double crop beans because people couldn't get the wheat off. And if they couldn't get the wheat off, and then it was too wet to go in and plant beans. So we're going to be down on our bean production, but it's going to be whether we can get back and stay consistently over this $10 mark. I think that we will see a rally to come back here for one more chance to sell them. Then we're going to have to see if the weather gives us a chance to harvest them well.
A 15-16 marketing year for beans running way behind, I think now at just 14%. Although, and I'm pretty certain you read this, Darrell Good's piece earlier in the week on his weekly outlook again, on the Farm Doc Daily website, suggested, well, we've been running way ahead of those numbers normally at this time of the year for the last 4 or 5 years, but 14% is on target, I think, what, prior to 2006, if I remember correctly.
Well, the art of world freight transportation is the key in through here. They're on a time schedule. They can't have those ships sitting around, and so it's going to become a timing factor. We got to have those beans bought, shipped to where they need to go out, plus two. They got to get them to Asia, then they got to get the boats back to get another load or whatever, then they got to shift to the southern hemisphere. So the fear is we'll get skipped over on some bushels here if we don't get our act together,
yep,
or see them get their act together by our beans, that is.
Now, the other item that we probably ought to take up, and I think, Kurt, I'll have you do this for me, is that technically the market is in a unique position right now.
Well, there's several things to look at. Cycle-wise, we're due for some cycle lows here to come in next week or the week after here, so we'll be watching that. If you turn back the clock, we did have some reversals to the downside, and we're seeing a correction. The thing we're watching is 50% retracements back to the low. The key area in December corn is going to be 408, and the 50% retracement in November beans is going to be 970. So I think those are key levels to watch here this coming week. If those hold, we could be quite interesting.
He's right. You know, like I said, I was talking with Dan just yesterday, and Dan Zwicker was telling me that, you know, if these hold, that we can put a little thing out there. We know that Sue Martin's got, you know, things to turn around and go higher next week. So all those cycles are there like that, and we are and have backed up a lot, and we have seen farmers quit selling.
Yeah, have farmers in the Western Corn Belt quit selling too, from your opinion, Elaine?
No, I think there's a lot of activity going on right now, and it might just be logistical, and they might be bushels that have been moved along, you know, technically sold a long time ago. But there's a lot of grain being moved around the countryside.
Yeah, I remember that from last Friday talking to the Andersons in Everly, Iowa, that they had still good movement there, but they have an awfully good crop, and I guess they need to move corn to make space.
Now, is that corn or beans or a combination of both?
Could be anything. Could also be wheat. You know, you've also got wheat trucks on the roads around here.
Because we're seeing the bull spread kick in the August versus the November here as we approach August deliveries fairly quickly here.
We don't have any beans in our area left. Yeah. The farmers sold them all out with the fall basis levels, and we're very tight on cash beans right now. And I hate to say it, with a lot of the weather that we're having in Indiana, double crops didn't get planted in our area basically very well, and there's a lot of first crops that are looking very rough. And I think the basis level is going to stay very strong, at least in central Indiana.
Okay, so I think we probably need to divide let's just divide it up between the has and the have-nots at this point. What's because I think your advice may be different for those two types of farmers. It may very well be an east and west of the Mississippi farmer, but let's just with the haves and the have-nots. What should they be thinking about today for their marketing plan?
Oh, that's a wild card. Everybody's in a different situation. I think as a pure marketer, we would defend the $4 level in December futures because if we go back below $4, it's going to present problems. But then yet, if you've been fairly aggressive and want to get some re-ownership on, I think you defend $4.50 on the upside. So the bull and the bear both have opportunities in through here. As far as cash marketing, you're just fighting the clock in through here and trying to move cash grain before harvest comes now.
Elaine Cubb, your suggestions?
Yeah, I think there's a timeline on how long you want to wait on this. I mean, both of these guys have mentioned the thought that the market could turn higher here in the next couple of weeks, and that certainly could happen. You're going to have commercial traders, both from the corn side and the soybean side, I think be willing to step in at these prices, that these are probably, you know, decent prices, and we've seen good demand from the ethanol plants and from soybean shippers. However, I'm not expecting any fresh highs. I don't think it makes sense to hold back too far or to be too optimistic about your opportunities in this year. So, if you know, these could be the prices where selling certainly makes sense.
We bought some 450 calls, Todd, with the idea that if it gets back up close to that, that gives us courage to sell. We're also looking at 1050 and then selling probably a $12 call against to do the same thing in the beans.
Final words for the day?
Well, like I mentioned before, I think there's bull and the bears both going to be right here short term, and there's plenty of opportunity for everybody out there. It's just a matter of setting up a plan and kind of sticking with it, because cash flow needs are going to be tight, and the key in here is to preserve working capital as we go into next year.
Kurt Kimmel, of course, is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities. He's in Newmarket, Indiana.
I think variability is going to be the key word to use this year, and I think because of it, we can't think of the high yields, but we do want to do some marketing as we go up, and we want to be able to do that. We've got to lock in some profits.
And our final word comes from Elaine Cubb. She's with Mastering the Grain Markets out of Elkhorn, Nebraska. Elaine?
Yeah, I agree that it doesn't make sense to get too unreasonably optimistic here, to have a plan and stick to that plan, especially with the threats from the outside markets, with the dollar that continues to kind of creep higher every once in a while. So strange things could certainly happen.
And that wraps up this edition of Commodity Week. Remember, you can always hear the whole of our program online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.